This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information, please visit LibriVox.blogsome.com. This is an international episode by Henry James. LibriVox Section 3. I'm Paula Berenstein from The Writing Show at www.writingshow.com. The young Englishmen spent the whole of that day and the whole of many successive days in what the French call the entremet of their new friends. They agreed that it was extremely jolly, that they had never known anything more agreeable. It is not proposed to narrate minutely the incidents of their sojourn on this charming shore, though if it were convenient, I might present a record of impressions nonetheless delectable that they were not exhaustively analyzed. Many of them still linger in the minds of our travelers, attended by a train of harmonious images, images of brilliant mornings on lawns and piazzas that overlook the sea, of innumerable pretty girls, of infinite lounging and talking and laughing and flirting and lunching and dining, of universal friendliness and frankness, of occasions on which they knew everyone and everything and had an extraordinary sense of ease, on drives and rides in the late afternoon over gleaming beaches, on long sea roads beneath a sky lighted up by marvelous sunsets, of suppers on the return, informal, irregular, agreeable, of evenings at open windows or on the perpetual verandas in the summer starlight above the warm Atlantic. The young Englishmen were introduced to everybody, entertained by everybody, intimate with everybody. At the end of 3 days, they had removed their luggage from the hotel and had gone to stay with Mrs. Westgate, a step to which Percy Beaumont at first offered some conscientious opposition. I call his opposition conscientious because it was founded upon some talk that he had had on the second day with Bessie Alden. He had indeed had a good deal of talk with her, for she was not literally always in conversation with Lord Lambeth. He had meditated upon Mrs. Westgate's account of her sister, and he discovered for himself that the young lady was clever and appeared to have read a great deal. She seemed very nice, though he could not make out, as Mrs. Westgate had said, she was shy. If she was shy, she carried it off very well. "Mr. Beaumont," she had said, "please tell me something about Lord Lambeth's family. How would you say it in England, his position?" "His position?" Percy Beaumont repeated. "His rank, or whatever you call it. Unfortunately, we haven't got a peerage like the people in Thackeray." "That's a great pity," said Beaumont. "You would find it all set forth there so much better than I can do it."
"He is a peer, then?"
"Oh, yes, he is a peer."
"And has he any other title than Lord Lambeth?"
"His title is the Marquis of Lambeth," said Beaumont, and then he was silent. Bessie Alden appeared to be looking at him with interest. "He is the son of the Duke of Bayswater," he added presently.
"The eldest son?"
"The only son."
"And are his parents living?"
"Oh, yes. If his father were not living, he would be a duke."
"So that when his father dies," pursued Bessie Alden with more simplicity than might have been expected in a clever girl, "he will become Duke of Bayswater."
"Of course," said Percy Beaumont. "But his father is in excellent health."
"And his mother?"
Beaumont smiled a little. "The Duchess is uncommonly robust."
"And has he any sisters?"
"Yes, there are two."
"And what are they called?"
"One of them is married. She is the Countess of Pimlico."
"And the other?"
"The other is unmarried. She is plain Lady Julia." Bessie Alden looked at him a moment.
Is she very plain?" Beaumont began to laugh again. "You would not find her so handsome as her brother," he said, and it was after this that he attempted to dissuade the heir of the Duke of Bayswater from accepting Mrs. Westgate's invitation. "Depend upon it," he said, "that girl means to try for you." "It seems to me that you are doing your best to make a fool of me," the modest young nobleman answered. "She has been asking me," said Beaumont, "all about your people and your possessions." "I am sure it is very good of her," Lord Lambeth rejoined. "Well, then," observed his companion, "if you go with your eyes open." "Damn my eyes," exclaimed Lord Lambeth. "If one is to be a dozen times a day at the house, it is a great deal more convenient to sleep there. I am sick of traveling up and down this beastly avenue." Since he had determined to go, Percy Beaumont would, of course, have been very sorry to allow him to go alone. He was a man of conscience, and he remembered his promise to the Duchess. It was obviously the memory of this promise that made him say to his companion a couple of days later that he rather wondered he should be so fond of that girl. "In the first place, how do you know how fond I am of her?" asked Lord Lambeth. "And in the second place, why shouldn't I be fond of her? I shouldn't think she would be in your line." "What do you call my line? You don't set her down as fast." "Exactly so. Mrs. Westgate tells me that there is no such thing as the fast girl in America, that it's an English invention, and that the term has no meaning here." "All the better. It's an animal I detest."
"You prefer a blue stocking."
"Is that what you call Miss Alden?"
"Her sister tells me," said Percy Beaumont, "that she is tremendously literary."
"I don't know anything about that. She is certainly very clever."
"Well," said Beaumont, "I should have supposed you would have found that sort of thing awfully slow."
"In point of fact," Lord Lambeth rejoined, "I find it uncommonly lively." After this, Percy Beaumont held his tongue. But on the 10th of August, he wrote to the Duchess of Bayswater. He was, as I have said, a man of conscience, and he had a strong, incorruptible sense of the proprieties of life. His kinsman, meanwhile, was having a great deal of talk with Bessie Alden, on the Red Sea rocks beyond the lawn, in the course of Long Island rides with a slow return in the glowing twilight, on the deep veranda late in the evening. Lord Lambeth, who had stayed at many houses, had never stayed at a house in which it was possible for a young man to converse so frequently with a young lady. This young lady no longer applied to Percy Beaumont for information concerning his lordship. She addressed herself directly to the young nobleman. She asked him a great many questions, some of which bored him a little, for he took no pleasure in talking about himself. "Lord Lambeth," said Bessie Alden, "are you a hereditary legislator?"
"Oh, I say," cried Lord Lambeth, "don't make me call myself such names as that."
"But you are a member of Parliament," said the young girl.
"I don't like the sound of that either."
"Don't you sit in the House of Lords?" Bessie Alden went on.
"Very seldom," said Lord Lambeth.
"Is it an important position?" she asked.
"Oh, dear no," said Lord Lambeth.
"I should think it would be very grand," said Bessie Alden, "to possess, simply by an accident of birth, the right to make laws for a great nation."
"Ah, but one doesn't make laws. It's a great humbug."
"I don't believe that," the young girl declared. "It must be a great privilege. And I should think that if one thought of it in the right way, from a high point of view, it would be very inspiring."
"The less one thinks of it, the better," Lord Lambeth affirmed.
"I think it's tremendous," said Bessie Alden. And on another occasion, she asked him if he had any tenantry. Hereupon it was that, as I have said, he was a little bored.
"Do you want to buy up their leases?" he asked.
"Well, have you got any livings?" she demanded.
"Oh, I say," he cried, "Have you got a clergyman that is looking out?" But she made him tell her that he had a castle. He confessed to but one. It was the place in which he had been born and brought up, and as he had an old-time liking for it, he was beguiled into describing it a little, and saying it was really very jolly. Bessie Alden listened with great interest, and declared that she would give the world to see such a place. Whereupon, "It would be awfully kind of you to come and stay there," said Lord Lambeth. He took a vague satisfaction in the circumstance that Percy Beaumont had not heard him make the remark I have just recorded. Mr. Westgate, all this time, had not, as they say at Newport, come on. His wife more than once announced that she expected him on the morrow. But on the morrow, she wandered about a little with a telegram in her jeweled fingers, declaring it was very tiresome that his business detained him in New York, that he could only hope the Englishmen were having a good time. "I must say," said Mrs. Westgate, "that it is no thanks to him if you are." And she went on to explain, while she continued that slow-paced promenade which enabled her well-adjusted skirts to display themselves so advantageously, that unfortunately in America there was no leisure class. It was Lord Lambeth's theory, freely propounded when the young men were together, that Percy Beaumont was having a very good time with Mrs. Westgate, and that under the pretext of meeting for the purpose of animated discussion, they were indulging in practices that imparted a shade of hypocrisy to the lady's regret for her husband's absence. "I assure you we are always discussing and differing," said Percy Beaumont. "She is awfully argumentative. American ladies certainly don't mind contradicting you." "Upon my word, I don't think I was ever treated so by a woman before. She's so devilish positive." Mrs. Westgate's positive quality, however, evidently had its attractions, for Beaumont was constantly at his hostess's side. He detached himself one day to the extent of going to New York to talk over the Tennessee Central with Mr. Westgate, but he was absent only 48 hours, during which, with Mr. Westgate's assistance, he completely settled this piece of business. "They certainly do things quickly in New York," he observed to his cousin. And he added that Mr. Westgate had seemed very uneasy lest his wife should miss her visitor. He had been in such an awful hurry to send him back to her. "I'm afraid you'll never come up to an American husband, if that's what the wives expect," he said to Lord Lambeth. Mrs. Westgate, however, was not to enjoy much longer the entertainment with which an indulgent husband had desired to keep her provided. On the 21st of August, Lord Lambeth received a telegram from his mother, requesting him to return immediately to England. His father had been taken ill, and it was his filial duty to come to him. The young Englishman was visibly annoyed. "What the deuce does it mean?" he asked of his kinsman. "What am I to do?" Percy Beaumont was annoyed as well. He had deemed it his duty, as I have narrated, to write to the Duchess, but he had not expected that this distinguished woman would act so promptly upon his hint. "It means," he said, "that your father is laid up. I don't suppose it's anything serious, but you have no option. Take the first steamer, but don't be alarmed." Lord Lambeth made his farewells, but the few last words that he exchanged with Bessie Alden are the only ones that I have a place in our record. "Of course I needn't assure you," he said, "that if you should come to England next year, I expect to be the first person that you inform of it." Bessie Alden looked at him a little and she smiled. "Oh, if we come to England," she answered, "I should think you would hear of it." Percy Beaumont returned with his cousin, and his sense of duty compelled him one windless afternoon in mid-Atlantic to say to Lord Lambeth that he suspected that the Duchess's telegram was in part the result of something he himself had written to her. "I wrote to her, as I explicitly notified you I had promised to do, that you were extremely interested in a little American girl." Lord Lambeth was extremely angry, and he indulged for some moments in the simple language of indignation.
but I have said that he was a reasonable young man, and I can give no better proof of it than the fact that he remarked to his companion at the end of half an hour, "You were quite right, after all. I am very much interested in her." "Only to be fair," he added, "you should have told my mother also that she is not seriously interested in me." Percy Beaumont gave a little laugh. "There is nothing so charming as modesty in a young man in your position. That speech is a capital proof that you are sweet on her." "She is not interested, she is not," Lord Lambeth repeated. "My dear fellow," said his companion, "you are very far gone." This is the end of LibriVox Section 3.